So I know we said brief another time, but I really just wanted to ask this. Now it's been what, 6 years? 2018 is 6 years. How does grief look different?
I feel like now grief is not longer, does not longer equal sadness, if that makes sense. What's up, D Squad? Happy Friday or happy whatever day it is when you're listening to this. I am your host, Duchesse Duhaye, and today I am joined by Belinda Katumba for a beautiful conversation that you'll get to hear about in a few minutes. But before we dive into all of that, I wanted to share something with you. The past 2 weeks they've been good. They've been busy. I work as a freelancer in digital marketing, and usually towards the end of the month I have these little projects that I have to finish, deadlines that I have to meet. So it was kind of busy, but it was also the 2 weeks that were leading to January 29th, which is my dad's birthday. You might know, you might not know, but my dad passed in 2018. And he would have turned 73 this year. And it's so funny because when I had a conversation with Belinda a couple of days prior to that, we talked about grief. Grief was was really at the center of our conversation. I shared on Instagram, and if you are part of the community, you would know what I'm talking about. And there's something that I never really get used to, no matter how many times it happens. And it's the messages that I receive from people whose lives have been impacted by my dad. This, it always comes so unexpectedly, because for me, when I share about my grief and my journey, it's to open the door for whoever wants to be able to share. And it's a way for me as well to keep my dad alive. And just this week, I got this beautiful message from this lady that I don't know, that I've never met before, and just telling me how my dad has impacted her. And it always makes me cry, because I'm like, you know, it just makes me feel like dad's legacy is way bigger than what I actually can imagine. And so if you are in the diaspora today, I just wanted to remind you to book that flight if you can, and go see your parents, go see the people you love, go spend time with them. I know we always think, you know, if not this year, then next year. But honestly, and I know it's hard, I'm not trying to make it sound as if it's so easy, but if you can, do not waste the time, because I can tell you one thing for sure: the money, the job, the financial security, they're beautiful, they're nice, but they're not everything. They really aren't. And if you are listening, you're somewhere on the continent, still go see your parents, still go spend time with the people you love, because I know some of us, you know, take it for granted, even when it's there. So I wanted to mention that real quick. And so Belinda, let me tell you a little bit about her before we dive into our conversation. I met her in December 2021. I had moved to Burundi, and one of the friends that we have in common was getting married. And so because it's so close, Burundi and Uganda, oh, sorry, didn't mention, Belinda is Ugandan and she's currently in Uganda. So Uganda and a wedding, sign me up. It was my first time in Uganda, and I met Belinda very briefly. She was delivering a special package to me, which we'll talk about again in the conversation. Belinda is so many things. She's so creative. She is a business lady, an entrepreneur. She laughs a lot. So I hope you laugh as well listening to this, and so many other things. You will get to hear about that in this conversation, and I hope you enjoy it. So I know you from way back when you were still going by Muna Kampala, but now everybody knows you as Belinda. So yeah. I want to know, where did that come from? Was it a nickname that you had when you were a child? No. Did you come up with it? And where did it go? I need to know all of that.
Oh my God, Muna Kampala. So it's so funny. With my social media, I feel like I've had seasons of who I am with different names on social media. So before I was Muna Kampala, I was Kemisola. which was a Nigerian nickname that I got before, and it sort of represented a time in my life then. So where Mona Kampala came from, I had just moved to Canada in 2018, and I felt like I was, when I moved to Canada, like your country sort of becomes your identity. Like the way someone asks you, how are you? The first question they ask is, where are you from? Where are you from? And I started feeling like I really represent what it typically means to be a Mona Kampala. A Mona Kampala means someone from Kampala. But like I was a party person because I used to enjoy going out a lot. I'd use Yuglish. So I just felt like I fitted what it means to be a Mona Kampala. And by then there was a so-called Mona Kampala that I really liked. So I took on that persona when I moved to Canada as a way to like where, yeah, I'm from Kampala. The Mona Kampala. So this was a, yeah, you know the song. But yeah, it's because I had started, I felt like I was now repping my country a lot more when I moved to Canada, because they would always say, oh, the Ugandans are this way and the Ugandans are this way. And I would fit all the boxes.
Right.
So yeah, that's where Mona Kampala came from. And I think she carried me through a certain season of my life. And then she stopped when, it's a bit tied in, maybe we'll get into it, when I moved back from Canada. I moved back after a tragic passing of like my sister and grandmother, and I couldn't resonate anymore with who Mona Kampala was. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I just decided to go back to Belinda. Like, yeah, it's just Belinda.
But it's not just Belinda, it's Belinda Katumba. Is it your, does it have a meaning?
I actually don't know if it has a meaning, but I think it was a name of maybe a king or something. Not a king, but someone important in the clan. But I don't know what it means.
Yeah.
I don't think it has a meaning. But I will say, I think in terms of identity, my dad always says the thing that he'll live with us is our name. And with him being a public figure, he's very proud of what his legacy will be and how it's attached to his name. So I will say that my name also gives me identity in that way.
That makes a lot of sense. You briefly talked about the reasons why you went back home, and we're going to dive into that indeed, because I know it's a big, I want to say, catalyst for a lot of change that happened in your life. But before we dive into that, I wanted to kind of talk about what initially brought you to Canada, and what were some of your good experiences in Canada that would have transpired after you moved back to Uganda?
So I moved to Canada in 2018. I was 24 by then. So it was after my first degree. I had finished my bachelor's degree. I grew up in Uganda, born in Uganda. And I think I was so used to the story of you finish high school here, and if you're lucky, you go for university in America or UK or Canada, and you chase peppers, and then you get peppers, and then life is beautiful. Yeah, so that's the story I grew up with. I had seen it a lot with my family as well. Like, my siblings all left Uganda after high school. I had aunties who had been living in the US. So we used to go, you know, when you visit to the US, you're like, yeah, I want to live here one day. So when I finished my first degree, I was in, you know, that part of limbo before you get a job and you're just confused with life. The first time you leave university, it's like, what the hell am I doing? So in the midst of that, I decided to do my master's. And I had been to Canada the year before. My brother had been studying there. It seemed like a nice place. Of course, everyone was saying, oh, it's very quick to get the papers. So literally, I just went for my master's and hoping to start the journey of getting papers and living the diasporan dream that they sell you.
What was that transition like for you when you moved from Kampala to BC? It was a small town, you said. What was it like for you?
I won't lie, it was very hard in the beginning. So I left Kampala on January 1st, like the start of a new year. I went from celebrating New Year's with my family to the depths of winter. And you know, BC has just mountains, like it's extra cold. And I didn't know anyone, so I didn't have family in Canada. as a whole country, let alone the city I was going to. So it was very lonely arriving to a very cold, snowy night. Sleeping, I had to sleep on the res bed as it had nothing because I arrived at night and I didn't know anyone. So it was the shock of my life. And I think being in a, you know, you hear about it all the time, you leave and this, but no one tells you how lonely that first night is going to feel like and how foreign you're going to feel like. I just felt so foreign. And I had to figure out everything. I had never been, because while I was in Uganda, I wasn't using like the bus. So I had to figure out everything. And with a small city, I think that's the first time I experienced depression. I remember calling my brother, like, just crying. Like, no, I hate this. And he's like, well, you took yourself there. It must be for a reason.
Right.
Yeah, so, but the transition was quite hard for me personally.
When we were talking, I was like, at least you were able to speak the language. Because some of us, we only speak French. So, arriving in Canada, and you don't know anything in English, or at least you know how to say, good morning, my name is, but that's it. It's even harder, because now you can't even. I remember you were talking about the bus, and it reminded me of the first time I got lost. I sat in the bus station, girl. I just cried because I couldn't even tell. I couldn't even communicate with the bus driver.
I got lost my first night. So the second night after I arrived, I went to a Walmart after getting lost on the bus. I finally reached Walmart. I had gone to buy a few things. And then I'm trying to use the Google Maps to go back and I get lost. And mind you, it's snowing. I can't feel anything. I thought I was going to die in the snow. I literally was this close to tears because I had no idea where I was. And then God is so good. As I'm lost, I meet someone who I knew from my primary school.
Oh, wow.
It was the most random thing. And I think that meeting changed the trajectory of that time of the transition. Because as soon as you meet fellow Ugandans, fellow East Africans, because for me, East Africans became my community. The Radis, Kenyan, like there's just something about, yeah. As well as the, of course, just generally when you meet fellow people who share your culture or whatever, then it starts to feel a little like, maybe I can do this.
It's hard. And I don't think, like you said, we are mentally prepared for it. Because again, the Western world is like that thing that has been so glorified in the media and on TV. And, you know, so that young African is like, I just want to go. It's beautiful. You're independent. You get to buy all this stuff. You get to, you know, but we don't really talk about that depression. And trust me, girl, everybody gets depressed. I haven't met one single African that moved here wasn't depressed for at least a few months.
Yeah, and I find it hard sometimes. I remember something that really struggled with that depression was as much as I was trying to explain it to my friends, they did seem to understand the lengths at which I was feeling it. Because, again, they're not living it. So, I mean, they're like, Belinda, we're here in Uganda suffering. What do you mean that you're depressed? I mean, your photos look nice because the sun looks so nice. You know, you look good. And it's hard to get support in that way because I found the people who could understand it were people who had been there before and they knew exactly what I was talking about. Yeah.
For how many years were you in Canada? You did your MBA, right?
I did my MBA for 2 years and then I moved to Toronto for about 1.5 years.
You briefly touched on, you know, East Africans being your community. How easy or how hard was it for you to find your community either in BC or in Toronto? And I want you to kind of go back to what, like, other moments that made you feel safe, you know, in that wild space that is Canada, and kind of talk about how you built your community from there.
Okay, that's interesting. I guess the two cities were very different.
Okay.
With Kamloops, because it was a student town, so Kamloops was like, it was mainly the university that was bringing many people there and leading to its development. So because it was a student town, It was a bit hard for me at first, one, because I was doing a master's. So I was a bit older than other, you know, most students are bachelor students.
Yes.
So there was that, but it was easier to meet people because it was a university town. So everyone sort of knows each other. Even when you get the jobs, you know, usually you get like a job secret through uni and everything. Everyone sort of knows each other. So if you meet one person, you're going to end up meeting all the randies. Like, it's the truth. And then, like, so with Kamloops, there was that. So I felt Kamloops started feeling like home maybe about half a year in. I literally was walking in university and I meet this girl and I'm like, are you Ugandan? She's like, yeah. And we became friends. She became my roommate. They became my family. Honestly, like, yeah, those are the people who end up being your family. And it was easier because, again, we're all doing the same stuff. It's a small city. Toronto was a bit harder for me. One, because I moved in COVID, like a dumbass in the lockdown is when I moved. Because I came back from Uganda, I graduated like early, when COVID was 2020. So I moved to Toronto in like late 2020. So this is in lockdown. But also I find with cities are way bigger. So it's hard to meet people if you're not intentionally putting yourself out there. And again, because now with Toronto, I was in a different phase of my life. I was not at school anymore. You also have work and this, like, everything is a bit harder to find people. So I mainly went through my friends. I actually found my best friend in Toronto. I think, yeah, probably you know her. But that was from meeting, like being very intentional. I had to really put myself in like things, you know, and you're like, oh, where are you going? Yeah, let me come. What are you guys doing? Yeah, so you have to, and I think that's the positive part of actually trying living in another country, because you have to put yourself out there. And the best thing about it, the thing I love the most with Canada that I miss to this day, is I could be anyone. While I'm in Kampala, I am the person who is attached to my family. I am the person who went to my high school. You know, there's so many boxes I'm under because people have known me here forever. So you sort of stay in the same comfort zone of this is who Belinda is to her family, to her siblings, to her friends, to your teachers and this. But with Canada, because no one knew me, I literally could just do whatever I wanted to do. So I found it easier to put myself out there. And yeah, eventually when I did get friends in Toronto, they actually became my family. Yeah.
I was going to ask if it was at that point that you decided to create the Can We Talk podcast. What headspace were you on?
I created Can We Talk while I was in Kamloops, when I was very lonely. Before I even found my friends of Kamloops is when I created Can We Talk. Yeah.
Okay.
I created it in my second semester of master's. By then I hadn't yet even found like my roommate. I hadn't found the people who became my close friends in Kamloops. And I discovered podcasts when I had just moved to Canada because they helped me feel less lonely. I'd feel like I have friends over, right? So I remember the first podcast I listened to literally in my res. I remember it so clearly. It was called Bereceipts Podcast. And I was laughing by myself and I felt so good. So yeah, I created Can We Talk from Kamloops after I did a radio show in Kamloops. I volunteered at a radio. And that made me realize how much I liked media and stuff. And that's how the podcast started.
Tell me how it evolved. Like, I know where it's at now. What was the idea behind it?
With Can We Talk? So I'm a very impulsive person. So I'm not the kind of person who plans things out. I'll start by saying that. Like, I'll be like, I want to do this. And then I start it today. And then later down the road, I'm like, oh, this is what we're doing now. So with that being said, I started off Can We Talk. By then I was, I think, 24. And I was so lost. You know, the middle of your 20s is so, like, what is going on, you know? So I started it to find answers. I had so many questions and I was just on a deep search for truth. So I started the first season. If you listen to the first season of Can We Talk,
It doesn't really even have a specific theme. I named it adulting because it kind of went everywhere. Imposter syndrome, this. I was just trying to figure out the middle of my 20s. And it's surprised me because it sort of had like a community grow up out of it organically. For me, it was just my creative outlet. I was so ashamed of it. I didn't even like push it. It was like an incognito thing that I was doing. And if you knew, you knew. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then after the first season, I think I did the first season up until I moved to Toronto. And then when I moved to Toronto, I seemed to be in a different season of my life. I seemed to like that we live in seasons. It's something that I think I just moved with. And then that one, I did it with the person I think who introduced us, which was about taboo topics. That was a creative collaboration. She had always brought up the topic of taboo topics and these topics that we don't talk about in our culture. And we decided to explore that. So that became a different season. And then by the third season, the second season ended abruptly. And I think by that time, I was in the place where I had just gotten like my dream job in Toronto after about 6 months of searching. I was now with like a Fortune 500 company, digital marketing person. And I still felt like something was missing. I genuinely couldn't get what was missing because now I had what I wanted. I had like a studio cute apartment in Toronto. I love Toronto as well. And things seemed to be like, why don't I yet feel at home, really? So that's when I did the last season, which was Finding Home, because I was really trying to, I had started now contemplating the idea of when will I go back to Uganda? Will this place ever feel like home, you know? Because I kept going back for a few weeks and coming back. So I started, that's when the question of what does finding home mean? Will I find it within myself? Is it people? And then in the middle of that season is when my life just, yeah, took a change and everything fell to bits. And then I stopped podcasting and turned into the Can We Talk games that we see today. Yeah. So for those who don't know, Can We Talk is all about connection. And I think it really came from my experience of Canada. That's something that I can say I know came from that season. I couldn't have appreciated connection the way I do. I think if I hadn't gone through that period of isolation and just feeling lost. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. In my mind of finding home, season was season two. And I have to say, it's my favorite season. Girl, I don't know if it's the headspace I was in. It's exactly like you said. But when I listened, I was like, yeah, exactly. Finding home in so many things, you know, like it's honestly one of my favorite seasons. And even today with this podcast, it being called The Discovered Oasis, it really talks about thank you, girl. Thank you. I think for me, it goes back to the same themes of, you know, finding ourselves, rediscovering who we are, finding or discovering that oasis, finding that home. So they're all kind of intertwined. And one of the questions that keep coming back on my podcast is, what is your home? How do you define home? That's the question for you.
I think so, honestly. I think I found my home. And I think I'm still finding it. I find that maybe it changes because even me, I'm not static. Recently, a thought has come up in my head to maybe try another city apart from Kampala. And I'm like, oh, here we go again. But not away from the motherland for sure.
Right.
But in terms of finding home, you know, so for those who probably are not familiar with me coming back, I lost my sister and grandmother in 12 hours within each other. And it completely shattered my life. And the fact that I didn't get to bury my sister because my flight was arriving too late impacted, like it really woke me up to what home is for me. Like I remember I went back, so I came back, went through the burial, stayed here for a month. My boss was so nice to me. She was able to give me like 2 weeks for each of them. So I was able to be here for a month and be here for my parents and my family. And then I went back to Canada.
And I remember when I went back, I just kept thinking, is it really this worth it to be away from the people that for me are home? Like, is it this deep? Like, for me to get these papers, and also because I still had a long way to go with the process, right? And I remember just thinking to myself, you know, like every holiday I would come back, you'd see your parents look older. By then, my brother was expecting my nephew, and I'm like, wow, wouldn't be able to, like, I'd see my nephew once in a while. And I just felt like, you know what? I think for me, value system wise, and I think this is something that everyone has to sit for themselves. I don't think it's the same answer for everyone, right? But for me, I did want to be close to the people that felt like home. I think for me, I found out that people and energy is a big part of home. So even being in Uganda, just the energy of Uganda, whether it's the nature or whether it's the nightlife, like both sides of Uganda, I just the way my soul just felt at peace when I was in Uganda. And it took me sitting down with myself and saying, of course, everyone is going to ask you, are you mad? Of course, the money is better in Canada and this. But I had to sit down and ask for myself, when I look back, what do I want? And for me, it was to be close to my family. It was to be in a place that, you know, I know all the corners of Kampala. Like, it just feels like it's part of me. It holds a part of my history. I like that I'm not othered, you know. I was so tired in Canada because they hired me with a wig. And every time I was talking to the people there, I had to put on my wig. And I was like, I'm so tired of this politics. I just want to be with my braids and my natural head. Okay, it's this and me, you know. So I think sitting down for yourself and defining it is very important.
It's so crazy how similar your story is to mine, because for me as well, my mom got COVID and she was in a hospital for the longest time. And we lost our dad in 2018. So I had to sit in January 2021 and be like, is this money worth it? Is really worth it? Am I going to stay here? And yes, I love the job. And, you know, this Toronto life, you know, it's exactly like you were saying it. Everybody's going to be like, are you crazy for moving back? Even my own mom was like, I'm going to get better. Don't worry. Just stay there. You need to get your papers.
You better stay there. Yeah. Get your paper.
I was like, no, it does not make any sense to me. And that's the point where I was like, I'm done. I quit my job, Belinda. I was like, I'm done. I'm just going home. I didn't have no plan A, no plan B. I was just going to stay with my mom.
Me neither. I remember my dad was like, are you crazy? And mind you, this was one market to me getting this very, like, it was, first of all, the job even of my dreams. Like, it wasn't just that. Yeah. And I was like, I will figure it out. I will go home. Because that's the thing I can say Canada gave me too. Like, the work ethic, I like experiencing how they work over there. I think it, and also I think having survived, you know, that fast transition, there's a confidence it gives you that I can do anything in this world, guys. Like,
you're under your
wheelchair on bed in Toronto and you've gone through all the snow. Like, there's a way it gives you the audacity to do, because there are things I did in Canada that I know if I stayed here, I would never have made that move. Yeah, I would never have said, let me go, I will figure it out. But after moving to another country and going through all the challenges, there's a confidence that I had of, listen, we will figure it out.
Yes, it's like, it's okay. It's okay. I got this. How did you decide to actually leave everything and move back?
So first, I'll say going through grief in Uganda was also an eye-opener. You know, I think there's so many moments I went through depressed in Canada, and even if I had friends, you still felt alone. There's a way in Uganda, time is elastic. Like, people will drop things and just be there for you and see. And the month that that we spent, I spent here, I spent it the whole time in community. Like, I don't think, at some point it became too much because also I get overstimulated. I'm an introvert. So sometimes I'd have to, you know, find my time alone. But sitting here in that month, I think, again, for me, I reached the point of what do I value? And luckily, because I was already on that journey with the podcast, sitting down and realizing how much for me I value family,
And also, I had always known that I would be moving back. Maybe it just came closer than I had expected. And when I started, and I won't lie, I thought I was moving back. Actually, when I first moved back, I still had a plan B, whereby I still had my work permit, so I was still working a little bit with a Canadian company. So I was keeping it on the back burner. And then I came back and started, Can We Talk took off as a business now. Because before it was just a podcast. When I came back to Uganda is when it switched to a business. And then I had sold my, I was selling my skills because I'm really good at branding and marketing. So I had put some, I was approaching businesses very outright. I would just come to you with a proposal and tell you, listen, this is what I can do for you.
Right.
So I had gotten a few clients on board. Then I had decided to go back to try the PR thing because I had set up Can We Talk and everything seemed to be now moving. I had my first two employees who are both part-time. I left Can We Talk with them. I will forever be grateful to them. And they ran it and I told them I'm going to Canada 6 months to a year after having been in Uganda. So I go back now, I'm going to see if I can start again, you know. And I went back and it did feel like home. My spirit was just not there. I just knew that the other thing I left is what was home for me. And I didn't want to build from the ground up again because now I'd quit my job. The rent was much higher. I went back to Toronto. I said, this is not the Toronto I left. Yeah, that's how I decided to move back. And then I came back and I just knew, yeah, this is it.
Well, was there anything that surprised you in how relationships or connections are made or built in Uganda compared to Canada?
Oh, yeah. With community, I found Canada to be more individualistic, generally. Because there were so many things that I used to find so amusing. Like if someone, you're moving in the street and someone, or you're in like a bus and someone falls there, no one really reacts, you know, like it's, it's like, yeah, but in Uganda, if anything happens, everyone stops and is like, what's wrong? Are they okay? So there was that, the general, everyone minds their business. Like there's no neighbor who is really, unless I'm your friend. But then I also found that the African communing was very strong in Canada as well. So the regular, like I said, for me in Toronto, my friends' families became my families. And it was just a lot of regular meeting as the people from the diaspora. I didn't have as much luck with making friends with Canadians. I did maybe at work, but I didn't go so much into their lives. I found myself always gravitating towards our own, and it always felt the same in the sense of you commune over food or this. Though I will say, and I think I mentioned this, is because of the system over there, there's also still less time than here. So here you go for a weekend where it's a wedding, then you go for a quadra, then you go for this. Like we seem to always have time to meet. If it's after work,
right,
you can still go for, like after work, I can find someone. But with Canada, it was like, okay, I have a shift and this. It's like everyone is always on the go. And it's not as, time is not as elastic for community as it is here.
Being in community in Africa is just organic. It just happens. It's not planned. It's not forced. It's almost unintentional, but really kind of intentional at the same time, because, you know, nobody's really forcing you to go to a wedding, but you need to show up for people. You need to be there for people. Whereas in the Western world, specifically in Canada, it's like, I am going to make plans to see X, Y, and Z this weekend. It's like, and there's no time for it, really. It's exactly like you said. There's more time for like going, you know, working and, you know, hustling all the time that you almost don't really want to spend time seeing people.
In Uganda, I'll spend time with someone and never know their name. When we started the Can We Talk cards, I think one thing that's different is, I think maybe the way we relate with each other here is very, is very conflict averse. Like we don't bring up anything that doesn't need to be brought up. even if you look at like the work culture, because when all the places I worked in Canada, if you did something wrong, like it's going to be addressed immediately, move on. Like this, it's very straightforward in the way they approach things. But here it's very, because of culture, whether it's about age or whatever, like there, maybe there's so many layers to how that can be addressed in relation. So that's something that I found different, with here.
I want us to talk about grieving in community. I know grief as well. I mentioned I lost my dad in 2018, and it was similar to your story because I too was able to only go for like 2 weeks for the burial and everything, and then moved back. And I got the same experience as you said. Everybody's so there and it's so warm, but also it gets too much because it kind of feels like you don't really have the space to grieve. Mm-hmm. It's two things that are like so opposite to each other, but also they coexist, right? The thing with grief is, you know, you learn to live with it, but also it changes you fundamentally, as people like to say. Mm-hmm. You mentioned that you lost your sister and your grandmother in just the span of 12 hours. How has that changed who you are? How has that put you on a path to like rediscovering Belinda?
It changed everything for sure. I can say first with the grief thing of you want to be alone. I think something that I also sometimes don't like about over here is you always have to be within your role and responsibility. Mm-hmm. Whether as the sibling order or who you are in the family or, you know, like, so even as you're grieving, as much as people are around you, the mother of the home still has to make sure are things kind of okay. And, you know, you're still sort of performing for these people with regards to your role and responsibility, which can be quite, quite hard. But with regards to how grief has changed me, I can say I am fully rediscovering who I am. I always say I look at the photos of Munda Kampala and I'm like, who is that? You know? Like she seems like a very different person. And that's why even the name changed. Like I literally don't know who that person was. I remember her. Like when I sit down, I remember Munda Kampala being filled with hope, being filled with just being carefree and just knowing that, you know, I think I always also thought that death comes at the end of life, you know, because experiencing my grandmother's death versus my sister's death also are two very different experiences. So I can say even the first year, it has made me even more, I don't want to say to myself, but maybe before I was very open. Like, now I'm a bit more, and I'm still open also because of the work that I do. But I think I have more boundaries in terms of being still making sure that I'm okay, which wasn't there before. And then also it has made me very empathetic. I think actually that experience is a big part of why I can do what I do with regards to our support groups, with regards to the type of like just the way we approach work in Can We Talk. I think there's a way grief makes you vulnerable. So for me, grief made me very vulnerable because it doesn't matter how much you try to act tough. It's at that moment that you're completely ripped apart for everyone around you to see how you're in a vulnerable time, right? So there's something it does for you. I think it helps you open up a bit more to the human side of yourself. But I am rediscovering myself because there's so many layers to it. For me, for example, ever since I was a kid, I had a big sister in my life.
Yeah.
I'm sure same for you. There's a person that you were when your father was still in your life because, you know, daddy was still there. Now you have to rediscover yourself without that person who played certain parts of your life, as well as the changes that your relationships go through by that person not being there. So there's a gap in the family that she has been feeling, whether you knew it or not. Maybe she was the one who planned the birthdays, or she's the one who did this, like there's a gap now that now also requires the people who are left to restructure themselves to sort of feel.
Would you say that having meaningful conversations have played a role in your healing journey, or was you being on your healing journey allow you to have meaningful conversations? Which one would you say it is?
You know, the politically, I'm not going to say what I would think I have to say. The truth is, I think me being on my healing journey is what is helping me do my work. I think before I always thought it was the other way around, but I truly don't think you can give what you don't have. Like, that's the truth. Because even with support group, I remember our first support group we did was on grief. And I always joke with our support groups that I need them just as much as the people I'm bringing need them. Actually, for me, any of the Can We Talk spaces, even the cards, go to it, and that day I've had like a long day, and I'm like, it fills me up just as much as the people there. And I think for me, I'm blessed that I get to do something that is pouring into me as much as it feels like I'm pouring into other people.
There's so many things that I feel like we need to talk about, not only about grief, but also the spaces that you've been able to create with Can We Talk and the cards. You talked about how it started as a podcast, but now it's a social enterprise, which is a big move, right? I want to know if, would you say it's something that happened organically, or did you really plan for it?
I am always shocked by, you know, I watch Can We Talk things like I'm like it's a third person who created it. Like, I don't know who this is running this brand, but I think they're pretty cool. Because I never plan any of it. So even when you asked how grief changed me, when I tried to go back to podcasting after everything happened, I couldn't. I tried so many times, and it just did feel like it was something I enjoyed. It didn't feel like it was me anymore, and that's where the game came from. So even with the cards, I'm trying to stop calling it a game. When the cards came out, and that's why you see the first cards are called Finding Home, because I didn't know I was starting a business. Like, for me, I was just I wanted it was a creative outlet for me. Finding Home, a lot of people say that edition is very deep because I created it out of my grief. I was very isolated in that time, and I was creating from my pain, and I was creating something that I think I needed for me. And when I put it out, again, I was shocked that people ordered the games, because I didn't even have a delivery man to deliver the things. Like, for me, I was just putting on the deck. But I guess it also goes to show how much community building is important, even just for delivering it to you. Because I just wasn't like to deliver them. I used to just bring them myself to people, and they always thought it's going to be like 10 things, and then we're done.
I remember I was like, how can I just order them cards? And you just came. You just delivered yourself.
I came. Yeah, I used to deliver them myself. Like, where are you at? Okay, let me come.
Yeah.
And I remember the first batch got sold out, and people asking, when is it coming back? And I'm like, what the hell? But as I was saying, I think also with community, with businesses. So the fact that I had built a community for the podcast before then, it's what really, I think, has always driven that the growth of Can We Talk. I think it's the community behind it and the authenticity behind it. It has always carried itself because of the authenticity of the work that is being done there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it shocks me sometimes, but I'm also like, this growth is not of my doing. It's because of the community's doing.
How many decks do you have by now?
I should know.
I want to say, I feel like it's 10.
I think they're like, I think they're 10 of, or maybe, well, now we have the mini decks. Yeah, I think maybe 10 or 11. And that's the thing. I think after I brought out the first one, I was like, oh, what if couples could do this? And then I realized families, because with every single person, you have certain boundaries, and conversations usually take a certain, most of the conversation starters I would see were very general. But if I'm having a conversation with my team and I want to connect with them, there's still some boundaries to how much I need them to know or this. So that's why every time, the last one that we released
in the starters was the faith one, because I realized church is another place that, you know, why aren't you opening up conversations here? And a lot of this, again, is from community, because as people play the cards, they'll tell you, you don't have one that I can use with my cell, with my cellmates. And then you realize, actually, you've never thought of that. Yeah. And now we have the mini packs, and we're trying to go into connection activities as well. Because, yeah, connection looks different. So that's the thing that I'm also learning.
You're doing an amazing job, Belinda. And I think when you were just saying, you know, like, as much as we love being in community, we don't talk about hard things, right? We don't have the tools to talk about the hard things. And I think somehow what these cards are doing and the spaces that you've created is kind of giving the people the tools and kind of teaching them how to have those hard conversations, whether it be in our families or with ourselves sometimes. Do you see the impact that you're having on people?
Oh, yes, because people tell you, and I think if there's anything that keeps me going, I swear to God, it's hearing someone say, I'll give an example last year. So with support group is something that I started again out of my own. I woke up and I was like, you know what, let's try a free support group, because we try to make the spaces as accessible as possible, because the cards, yeah, you can buy them, but want the spaces to be accessible. Mm-hmm. And I remember with support group, something that I'm realizing is we are so, our culture is deeply ingrained in community that we have put therapy on this pedestal, the individual one-on-one therapy. But I find that a lot of people who come for support group get healing and release just from being around other people sharing. It's something that's deeply ingrained in us that, oh, I'm not alone. Let me talk about this as well, right? And I remember last year he's an amazing poet. He has been a poet for about 17 years. He's among the people who started like creative poetry in Uganda and stuff. And he landed on one of our support groups randomly. I'm also proud that our spaces are among the few that men come to. So when he came, I remember later on in the year, he invites me to his book launch. So I go, and turns out that he had not written a poem for about 7 years, because he had a horrible creative block after going through a certain trauma. And after attending our support group, where he had a breakthrough and talked about something he had never talked about, he went home and wrote a full book in a couple of days after not writing for about 7 years. And it's not that we did anything special. It's really just about opening up a place where there is no judgment. So that's when you ask about the men who come for our spaces. I think one thing that I was very intentional about is we never want to turn things into versus and debate. This is not a debate. As long as everyone is being respectful of everyone's opinions, you can share your opinion with no judgment from your experience, you know? And that's something that we do communicate even during our spaces. That some of the men have told me, like, sometimes I think when they come for certain spaces, I'll give you an example. Men's friendships are very different from women's friendships. And I think a lot of men, for example, something I've seen that was shared is a lot of times when men tried to share what friendship means to them, that, yeah, us, we are okay with what our friendships are. Our intimacy looks different than this. It then turns into a debate of, no, you guys are doing friendship more than this. And yeah, you can also give how you think his experience could be better, maybe if they learn how to open up to each other or whatever. But not coming from a place of you're wrong, I'm right.
And I am grateful I was able to get the first deck. I wish I could get all of them. Do you actually send them online, or is it just available if you're in Kampala?
Yeah, currently it's available in Kampala. We do sell if you're in Kampala online, but through our partners, Mahiri Books, you can get it in East Africa.
So my East African people, you know what to do. You know what to do. I'm probably going to leave a link in the description just for people who are interested in getting the cards. Again, I have one deck myself and I absolutely love them. I used to even... I was going to say play them, but like use them for building community on my social media.
Yes, that's
you saw that? Yeah. And it's just amazing.
I like how you create.
Thank you. Thank you. although you weren't gone for too long, you were still gone for a few years. And I'm assuming certain things have or had changed by, you know, like during that time that you were gone. How did you build your initial, I want to say, network of like, see the two people that you left, can we talk about how did you meet them? Was it your family? How did you manage to find your partners after?
I think there was a rebuilding of community in terms of with my friends. So you leave and you come back one, a different person. And so are your friends, because your friends are also going through life here and they're also changing. So there are some friends you come back to and the friendships unfortunately don't feel the same, even if you try to make it feel the same. And then there are those that still feel the same and it's like you've just come back home to them. Right. So one of the first people who I left Can We Talk With was a friend of mine from university who we're still friends with, but she was looking to, you know, make some more money on the side. And so she came on to help me with Can We Talk. And the other person, I literally interviewed. So I know there's the whole thing of good luck finding someone. It's true. It's true. It's a bit hard to find someone who works with a good work ethic and this. But I think I did my interview style based on personality. And somehow we just grew with her. And it worked out because of the type of person that she was. But I think with network, I was lucky also because I was born and went to school here. I think there's those networks that you can tap into just from someone you went to school with or this. But for me, I also really shoot my shot. Like, I'm one of those people. I like what you're doing. Social media is a big one for me. If you're using your social media authentically, the right people will come to you there as well. So with Can We Talk, a lot of collaborations have come through that as well. I see what you're doing. You see what I'm doing.
Yes.
I think we're aligned. Do you want to do something together? I think it's Issa Rae who talked about collaborating across. So it's something for me I have done, because in Uganda, there's always someone, we're always on a hustle. Someone has something on the side. Like,
yes.
So you can always find someone who, and I think it's a good time for us because a lot of our people are now also in like the managerial positions, because now the old generation, maybe they're not yet out in the politics side of things, but like in terms of like business work, people are owning businesses now. Mm-hmm. They're the decision makers in companies, you know? So it's a good time for you to try something here because the decision makers are in our generation now.
So I actually left Burundi when I was 16 years old. So I was pretty young. And every time we would go back, it would be with our parents. You know, it was different for me going back in 2021, because then I was an adult. So I kind of have had to learn to live in Burundi as an adult compared to as a teenager, and doing things without my mom watching my back all the time. And I remember one time I went to the bank. And back then I will always go, you know, asking my mom, hey mom, do you have so-and-so's number? I just want to know if they're open, whatever. Cause you know how it is. Sometimes there's no like opening hours on the website. So you kind of have to ask somebody. So I was like, I'm not sure if she's in. I need to text her before I go. And I remember my mom telling me, but you know, that person who was like an auntie, do you know she retired? I'm like, hey, then who works at the bank? And I was so confused. I was like, if she retired, then who's working? I ended up going without knowing anybody. I was like, I'm just gonna walk in and whoever I see, hopefully somebody is gonna help me. And guess who I met? This girl that I went to high school with was the one who now
now our peoples, and it feels nice to think.
Definitely. Because now you have that bond, right? And you have that. Yeah, no, it's so true what you just mentioned.
You know, the best thing with here is people are like, yeah, we lack customer service, but people are friendly. Like, if I know you from high school or if I recognize you from somewhere, I'm going to treat you like I know you from somewhere.
100%.
Yeah. Yeah. Connection med. Yeah. So it's a good time. To to invest back here because of who's making the decisions with the in the business side of things and work, corporate as well.
Well, aspects of running a business in Uganda surprised you the most?
Well, everything. First of all, as I said, I didn't know it was starting a business. So I think I was more on the impact side of things. And now, and I know it's funny because I did an MBA, but for me, it was always theory. Of course, the systems, maybe that's not a surprise, but like getting your things registered, what? Like if you don't have a gambano go, as they say, like you have to have someone. But also, I think a good surprise for me was my team, in the sense of, yeah, you can get people who, and a lot of people are coming back, but also a lot of people do have the good work ethic and then also the creativity.
That's actually good.
Yeah.
Do you ever get questions from other Ugandans in the diaspora who want to move back?
So the first thing I always say is, if you want to move back, just do it. Because I always compare it to, you know, I don't know about you, but I have a lot of aunties and uncles that I know from the, what's the generation for us? The baby boomers. Like, since you've known them, they were going to move back to Uganda. Like, since 15 years ago, they've had their boxes packed. All they talk about is Uganda. Like, they live in the States, they live in the UK, they live in Canada, but all they talk about is Uganda.
Right.
Or their plan to move back, and now they'll never move back. So change is a bit harder, I think, the older we get. So I always tell anyone who wants to move back, because you get those questions, I would say, decide on a day and move, because you'll never be ready. And if you don't want to do it that way, start doing regular visits back, so that you're also, you have something to come back to, especially if you've left for a bit. And also with the way the motherland is set up, things move faster when you're here. Decisions here are made on the spot. Like, so either come back, decide, or keep coming back a bit more regularly so that you are making decisions and things are moving for you.
And what about somebody who wants to not only move back, but start a business?
There's someone who was saying that the biggest opportunity in Africa is mediocrity. And I really believe that. And it doesn't matter what industry you're entering. Let no one tell you that, that industry is exhausted. You know, people have that fear mongering of, if you do that, you won't make money. If you have your vision, don't be mediocre. Because for us with Can We Talk, it goes down to, my team knows this. How are we answering the phone? The person who answers the phone or Can We Talk has to feel as personable as Can We Talk feels when they come for a space. And it's such a little detail, but it's because I've lived in Uganda and I'm so mad at how people who own businesses talk to their customers. I know what takes me back to a business in Uganda because I got what I needed. So don't allow yourself to seep into the mediocrity of things, because things can move here on a mediocre basis. They really can. But I don't think it's sustainable. So the way to set yourself apart is to, you know, set your standard high. The other thing I would say is get yourself a lawyer who's going to get all your registration, who's going to help you with trading licenses, whatever. That person, get them on speed dial. Ask someone who's trustworthy, because, yeah, they may not look for you or whatever, but have your things done.
That's honestly a good advice. And I think it's also from what I think, right? From somebody who lives abroad, because of that individualism that we talked about, we kind of go into the mindset of thinking that we can do everything just by ourselves.
So,
you know? And it's not true. It's not true. People are there to help. People have more knowledge than you. You know, if you're not a lawyer, have never been a lawyer, trying to, you know, build a business, get a lawyer that can advise you on things that, you know, you didn't even know needed.
And also, I'd say most sales contract things are very awarded on relationship basis here.
Yeah.
Because it's also our culture that, you know, it's just our culture also that, so network, like honestly, and don't network this typical work, going for a business, networking thing, whatever. Allow yourself to meet people, sell yourself, because people here work with people. Also understand the changing market that you're serving. And I'll say this with regards to, so I also run a tourism company. And
I think it's I've noticed within that industry, for example, it's so easy to think that, oh, tourism is sold to, like, the safaris and stuff is sold to the white man who's coming to Uganda, because it's what you think. But the people within the cities are changing. So you need to know, okay, what do the luxury Ugandans like, you know? What does the expatriates who are young, what do they like? Because we're no longer in a city where it's just Ugandans and it's just Kenyans and it's just Burundians. A lot of these cities now also have, we are in a global village. So take some time to also truly understand what it is now and not make decisions off of stereotypes.
Those are really good advice. We are going towards the end of our conversation. Oh my God, Belinda. I feel like I would love to have you for another part some of the time, because there are so many things that we can talk about, honestly. I would love for us to talk more in depth about grief, but it's not the topic of today, so we're gonna keep that for another time. But I have two questions that I always ask my guests towards the end. For you, it's gonna be two more, because I have two Can We Talk cards here.
Did I just have
Belinda?
Can we talk?
I tried to pick the easy ones. Don't worry. So the questions that I usually ask my guys is, if you could fly to any African country today, where would you go and why? And you better make it Burundi, because in East Africa, that's the only country you haven't been to. So go ahead and say something else. Let's speak. Uh-huh.
Burundi, that's it. That's where I'm going.
Have you been to Tanzania before?
Yeah.
Girl, I need to arrange something for you. I need to link you up, because this needs to change.
The next time you're coming home, let me know.
I'm taking you over here.
Good one. Yeah.
I am taking you. Listen, I have to be honest. I love people that really experience Burundi without knowing anybody there. But as Burundian myself, I'm like, I need to know somebody. Like, the friend that we have in common, she's been telling me that she wants to go to Burundi. I'm like, wait until I'm there, and then we can go. And to be fair, I think it's something as small as the language barrier. I think for Ugandans, it's okay somehow, but because most people speak Kirundi and French, for somebody who only speaks English, I mean, I'm saying Ugandan, it's okay, because like Kirundi is somewhat similar to your language, somewhat. I honestly feel like you would love the people, because we are similar to Ugandans in a way. And I'm saying this as a person who visited Uganda, but also left feeling like, hey, Ugandans are crazy. Yeah. I was like, Siji, I cannot do Kampala for more than 3 days. I cannot. But I would say Bujumbura is nice. It's vibey.
Yeah.
But I feel like for you, as somebody who lives in Kampala, it wouldn't be that different, if that makes sense. So I would say upcountry for sure. There's so many small corners that, you know, again, you got to know somebody. You got to know somebody who's going to take you there. But yeah, we have the beach. I love being at the beach back home. But yeah, come when I'm there, and I'll show you places for sure. Yeah. But you can say another country, okay? Because I'm nice. I will allow you to say another African country that's not.
I really want to go to Cape Town and Diani. I have a thing for water. So Kenya, I love Kenya so much. So Kenya is a place that I was like, I wonder if I could live here. I love the feeling of Kenya. And now I could only imagine if I was on the coast. So I really would want to be in Mombasa, Diani. But Cape Town as well is another place that I want to visit. But there are many African countries. I think Ghana has been up there on my list as well. I've never been to West Africa, and I really feel called to Ghana. I don't know why.
Yeah.
Maybe one day.
Okay, next question. Who is your favorite African artist at the moment?
The first person that came to mind is a Ugandan artist, Elijah Chitaka. I'm obsessed with the way he sounds, like even live. I love his flow. So Elijah Chitaka, and Faith is another one I've been listening to like a crazy person.
Okay.
All right.
Two questions from the Can We Talk deck card. The very first one, Finding Home Edition. Okay. The first question for you. I mean, we have to. Come on. If you could choose to remain one age forever, what age would it be and why?
Age. I think I would go back to 21. 21 has been my favorite age. I think I was young and naive enough, but old enough to be right in the like all the pros of both being an adult but not being an adult the way I'm adulting right now. So I'll go back to being 21.
The answer that I give to this question, whether, you know, I'm playing with my community online or like just my friends, mm-hmm. I feel like it changes. So when I actually put it, I was like, what answer would I give to this question? Because now I feel like I would just be any age where my dad mm-hmm. is around. Like, it doesn't matter.
Well, that too. Even when I remember 21, I'm like, yeah, my sister was there. Like, life was so good. You know, with grief, it's like life is like before and after.
After. And
yeah, I might not. That's a good answer for sure.
You know,
I'd go back to any time before 2021.
I'm telling you. But anyways, see, this we could go on. We could go on, but let's stop. Okay, which people, living or dead, have influenced your life the most?
I'd say, honestly, it's my close family, like my parents, my brother. First, I would say my brother, even before my parents. Me and my brother are really close. And also, he sort of, when I went to Canada, he just sort of became, I always say he's like my board of directors. It's not that he makes the decisions in my life, but he's someone I go to hear what he has to say. We're also very similar. I think we're like kindred spirits or something. So him. My parents, because I really am a reflection of like both my parents. Yeah, my sister as well, because she taught me so much about being a woman, like, you know, being the little sister, everything she's on who taught me, whether it was getting my hair done, waxing, like taking me shopping. I traveled a lot with her as well. So I always say, I think it's my family for me.
Mm-hmm. That's a very beautiful answer. I think for me, it would hands down be my mom and my dad. More so mm-hmm. my dad today, because I've had the time to reflect on it a lot more in the past few years, because he really, mm-hmm. really was a present father. He was a business owner, so he had the flexibility to be there with us. My mom is an expat. She traveled a lot more than my dad. So there are so many things. And me being the firstborn, I was just thinking back, you know, the things you were saying your sister taught you. Me being the firstborn, I didn't have a bigger sister. But somehow my dad was always there. You know, like she would tell me, you know, like you need to have this and this as a girl. Those small things, as it's like, if I'm doing this today, I'm doing it because my dad taught me to do this thing.
Yeah, can I ask? I know we said grief another time, but I really just wanted to ask this. Now it's been, what, 6 years? 2018 is 6 years?
Yeah.
How does grief look different?
I feel like now grief is does not longer equal sadness, if that makes sense. Like, I feel like the first year, grief was like, not only was heavy, but it was also sad. It was depression, it was sadness, it was, you know. But now it's like, it kind of is a reminder that the person is no longer there. It has changed because it's no longer as loud as it used to be. It's not as sad. And I have become this person that I am, that I love so much. So I feel like it's that part of me that no longer causes me pain, if I can say it that way.
Oh,
yeah.
That's really beautiful.
What about you?
Hope to get there one day. I'm right in the so same in terms of maybe it's not the same heaviness as the first year, but for me it is still sadness. It's weird. I think I'm in that place where sometimes it's still surreal to me that I'll never see this person again. So it shocks you. Actually, there's a quote that I saw that I think it's also kind of what you said, that grief
grief is not like the heavy rain that comes. Like now it feels more like, you know, that rain that's just there. It's little rain, but it's rained all day. And you can forget that it's raining. Then when you try to go out, you're like, still raining. That's, yeah, so I'm right there. At least now I can talk about it without crying.
I'm so grateful that we lost him during a time where we actually had audios and pictures and, like, you know, so I can easily go back to an audio that he sent me, you know?
Oh my God.
Being able to hear his voice.
I can't imagine how people lost people and they couldn't see them or hear them. That would be crazy. Yeah.
That would be crazy.
The first thing I did was back up my full WhatsApp message.
Same.
Audios with it. Yeah.
Thank you for asking the question.
Because I'm always curious for the, I'm like, will it ever get better? And when I listen to people, I'm like, I guess acceptance finally comes because maybe that is what acceptance feels like. Yeah.
You know, the one friend we have in common said, when I told her I was going to have this interview with you, and she was like, oh, I can't wait to hear this episode because you and Belinda love to ask questions. I wonder how it's going to.
I wanted to ask you so many questions, but I'm always like, Belinda, breathe. You know, sometimes I have to remember, I'm not the one. It's not my podcast. Breathe.
No, like, I honestly wanted for this to feel like a conversation more than just, you know, it's not a CNN interview, girl. So, honestly,
I've really, it felt like
talking. Honestly, I'm glad. Yeah. There's one more thing that I wanted to ask. If, now that it's been many years since you moved back, what is it that you love? Like, what is it that makes life in Uganda so worth it for you, or in Kampala specifically?
I think for me, as I said, it comes back to the energy and the people. Like, the people in terms of my family, my friends, but also just the people. I don't know how to explain it. Ugandans are funny. Like, yeah, they're also frustrating because if you drive here, you'll be like, what the hell is going on?
Right.
But I think that part was such a big part of what home is to me. Like, I know it. I know, because I remember when I used to drive in Canada, I was more on edge. And in Canada, everyone is driving according to the rules. And then I'll come back to Ghana and I'm like, yeah, this is home. Like, let's go, you know? So I think for me, maybe the disorganization also is a part of me. But it's the energy and the people. I love that when I go out with people, I come home feeling really, yeah, this felt good. I love that I can see, you know, my nephew stays 5 minutes from me. I can go see him and I can see my parents as they age. Like, I am really, really grateful for the energy and the people. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I love that we're ending this conversation on this note because one of the questions that I get from people, it's always like, why would you go? Why would you want to move back? Because, you know, life here is hard and all that. But and I agree that there is a part of us that is privileged to be able to be like, hey, you know what? I'm just going to go back home because that's where I'm finding the peace. There's so much privilege in being able to do that. But also it's so important for people to understand that you get to a point in life where you just want to be around the right people.
Yeah. And for me, like also I said, I think experiencing my sister's death, because it was sudden, and, you know, she was young, she was 32, and I knew the plan she had for that Saturday and this, you know, it really woke me up to, I know we say it all the time, that life is short or this, but it really woke me up to the fact that what is all this for? So for me, the sacrifice, for example, is I'm not making the money I was making while I was working with HarperCollins. Not even at the slightest. And
yeah,
and that's a sacrifice that I made. Another sacrifice is, you know, our countries are unstable. So whatever happens, let's say in the country, obviously when they switch off our internet, that's a sacrifice because in Canada, I'm going to be safe. I can walk down the street at 9 p.m. I can't do that here. I can't walk down the street at midnight. So there are sacrifices being made. But for me, when I weighed it out after experiencing death so close and so sudden,
I realize that there's nothing else I'm living for apart from the love that I experience while I'm here.
It's
the joy I experience while I'm here. Even Can We Talk, which I hope will be my legacy. I may not, like, who knows what will happen to it if I'm not here. Like,
yeah,
it's yeah. So there's sacrifice for sure. Like, I'm not even reducing the sacrifice that has to be made. But whatever choice you make, I think be honest with yourself in terms of the sacrifice you're making.
Right. And I think that also is a good advice to give to a person who's in the space of, should I move? Should I not? Like, what is it, you know, that you're going there looking for? Because it's exactly like you said, Belinda, there are so many things that can also take that peace away. You know, if you think, oh, I'm just going to move back home because that's where the peace is. Maybe not quite.
Every weekend you have to explain why you don't have children yet. Sacrifices and their thing. But it's worth it for me.
It is. I'm so happy, Belinda. This conversation is so beautiful. Yeah. Good luck for everything that you're doing. Do you want to tell people maybe where they can find it? I'm going to link it in the description, but it's always good to hear it from you.
Yeah. So for those who don't know, Can We Talk is a social business that's all about connection, conversations, and community. We do it through our products, which are the Can We Talk Conversation Starters. You can find everything at canwetalk256.com. Hopefully soon we'll be shipping internationally. But yeah.
Wonderful.
Thank you. Can I just say I really enjoyed this? First of all, I also love the name Oasis. I was reflecting on it today and just thinking about the parallels of finding home and your podcast because I was listening to it. Yeah, but I really think you are in your purpose. You're an amazing creative and storyteller. And I'm so happy that you're doing this. I know it's going to reach the people it has to reach. So thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. This means a lot.
Telling her how timely this is because I know a lot of people are like, either do I come back? But even the ones here, a lot of us are about to leave because of the frustration. So I think just hearing different people's experiences, much needed conversation, by the way.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Belinda. Keep doing the work that you're doing. I'm here. I'm watching you. You know, the second I get to get another deck, I will get it. But yeah, I appreciate you much.
Babe, see you in Burundi.
Oh, see you. Yeah, exactly. Okay, y'all. That's it from Belinda and I. I hope you enjoyed this conversation. Let me know in the comments what was a special moment for you when you were listening to this conversation. Rate this podcast and share it with a friend if you liked it. And as I always say, no matter where you are, there's always a path to discovering your own oasis. I'll talk to you soon.